The new Wegovy pill is now available through Weight Watchers. Powerful GLP-1 results in a simple pill at the lowest price available. And with Weight Watchers, you can get doctor support and personalized nutrition programs. See if you qualify at weightwatchers.com. Ad not reviewed or approved by Novo Nordisk.
Welcome to Sexology, a podcast that untangles the science of sex and pleasure. And now, with this week's episode, your host, clinical psychologist, Dr. Nazanin Moali.
Welcome back to another episode of the Sexology podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Nazanin Moali, and today we're talking about something that so many couples experience but rarely talk about openly: sexless marriages. I hear this all the time. We love each other, we're good partners, but we just don't have sex anymore. And over time, that distance doesn't stay physical. It starts to affect how people feel rejected, disconnected, and even lonely in their relationship. So today, we're getting honest about why this happens, why even touch can start to feel awkward, and what couples often do that accidentally makes things worse when they try to fix it. I'm joined by Alana Auerbach, the author of Sure Thing, who brings a really grounded and practical approach to helping couples reconnect. And before we dive in, if you're looking for a simple place to start, I created a free list of 9 foreplay ideas to help you begin rekindling connection starting tonight. You'll find it in the show notes. In this episode, we're also answering real questions and experiences you've shared with us around sexless marriage. All right, let's dive in. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Sexology podcast. I am so excited to welcome Alana Auerbach to our show. Alana, welcome to our show.
Thank you so much. Such a delight to be here.
I'm excited for this conversation. I know that whenever we have a conversation about sexless relationships, people often have so many questions. So we received some of your questions from the previous video, and I'm going to send it and share it here with you guys. But before we're going to talk about why people end up at sexless relationships, if you're curious with the definition, what sexless relationship is, the definition could vary based on the research study looking into the culture. Some majority of the literature I look into, they say like when people have sex more than once a month. So that would be the frequency. And I know that many people, I work with them, I see them, they say they deeply love each other, but they just don't have sex anymore. Alana, tell us, why do you think it's so common in long-term relationships for people to end up in that place?
Well, I think for one is that we don't have any kind of practices to continue to cultivate intimacy and connection with each other. And so if we don't, we're not told about that this is a necessary thing to keep that the flame of passion alive. And our brains, I'm sure you know about studies that are done, like neurotransmitters that are firing when you first like fall madly in lust with someone and you've got all that passion and you can't wait to rip each other's clothes off and all of that. The studies show that that could last maybe 3 to 4 years, maximum. So if you're in a relationship that lasts more than 4 years, that lasts decades, then if you want to have sex in your relationship, it is going to take something. It is not just going to magically arise with spontaneous desire, you know, spontaneous versus responsive desire. And so we have to really understand that there's something called responsive desire that arises out of context, out of feeling safe, out of what you said, you love this person. And so creating experiences with this person that you love so that responsive desire can arise. Because if we don't do that, if we just carry on with our life, everything is so busy. You expand the family, people have children, people have responsibilities, people are volunteering in their communities, they have work, they have jobs, they have taken care of the household. And then what falls to the bottom of the list is cultivating intimacy and sex. Because if you don't have intimacy, then there's not going to be that emotional safety that you feel with your partner And so you're not going to be interested. And it feels like, and then what happens and what happened in my relationship is that there was a 12-year struggle. Are we going to have sex? Are we not going to have sex? As you know, and I'm sure most of your listeners know, 100% of couples have a discrepancy in desire. So there's one who has a higher libido, higher desire, and one who has lower desire. And so inevitably, that will cause friction. That will cause frustration. Rejection will happen. And so what happens is all of this stuff builds up. And I've heard it described as like a pane of glass that comes down between you and your partner. And then another pane and another pane and another pane. And all of the rejection, the hurt feelings, the abandonment, the withholds, the not sharing my desires, all of those panes of glass, it's not very long before you can barely see each other. Clearly, or at all. And so it's no wonder that sexless partnerships, sexless marriage is as common as it is.
I agree with you. And I often hear people coming into my practice when they are newly partnered or married, and they say, like, I don't want to end up like my parents, right? Like they loved each other, but I don't think they were affectionate in kind of sexual way, or they slept like in different beds for years and years. And we continue to do the same behaviors that lead people to kind of like repeat the same cycle. As you mentioned, it's very easy for people to connect sexually, for majority of people, with a stranger that they're kind of like physically attracted to, right? But then when the novelty dies off and the commitment deepens, as you mentioned, it needs to be spaces that people can intentionally work on cultivating desire or giving their relationship the opportunity to have sexual spark. Because sometimes when we are with someone that we love, like strong, deep, we have deep respect, friendship is good, the polarity is often gone, right? That sexual tension is not there. And we need to have spaces to build that up. So that could be one of the reasons that many people end up in a sexless relationship, because the template that they have about what it takes to have passionate sexual experiences in a long-term partnership, as you mentioned, it's not accurate. The other kind of like the reason I see is sometimes people wait so long, right, until that they address it, right? We have this magical thinking that it's going to get resolved, right? Like, I care for my partner, it's not that bad. But as you mentioned, the longer we wait, for majority of the cases, it can add to the issue with kind of like experiencing the pattern of rejection and disappointment. For some couples, like infidelity. So it could be many layers added. So I think like not addressing it is actually can be a challenge. One of the common feedback we got from our listeners, I hear it all the time from my clients as well, that they say that I feel trapped in a sexless marriage because we have kids, right? Mm-hmm. They're just like, they even in a way lost hope about the change, but they don't know what else they can do. Why do you think it is such a common experience for people to be in that place?
I think it's so common because we are not taught that we need to practice intimacy, that we need to practice closeness with ourselves, and certainly with the people that we're married to. You know, we just have this fantasy, and it's underscored by Hollywood movies that spontaneous, like you said, you can more easily feel that passion arise for a stranger who you just, and that's spontaneous desire, right? That's when like our pheromones react from something that is from sexual activity in the future that we're fantasizing about, like this could happen. Oh, I want that. Oh, they turned me on. Instead of the responsive desire, which is primarily when you're in a long-term relationship, you are going to have responsive desire, which arises in context. And so it won't arise unless we create those contexts. And so whenever we want to get better at something, what do? You practice it. Right? You practice it, you hire a coach, you hire a therapist, you hire a teacher, and you put in the time, you practice. We don't do that with intimacy until now. until now, you know, I've created this practice called The Sure Thing, which is a weekly pleasure practice that my spouse and I have been doing for over 5 years. And that it immediately ended this 12-year struggle. And it has liberated me like I cannot even tell you. And it continues to be a miracle in my life. And it was so obvious in retrospect to recognize that, oh, of course we have to practice intimacy. If we want to get closer and continue to tend and fan the flame of that spark of connection and desire and passion between us, of course we have to practice. It's not good. That's how everything happens, is with practice. It's not about perfection. It's not about practice makes perfect or anything like that. It's about practicing the act of turning towards each other and exploring pleasure. And I encourage in our practice, we started with an intention. I always like to encourage people to start with an intention. What is it you really want in your sexual life? For us, it's deepening in intimacy, pleasure, and connection. It's not about having sex. So it's not goal-oriented about achieving something specific. It's about feeling closer, cultivating pleasure together. Now, there's lots of orgasms that often happen and sex often happens, and that's not our goal. However, if somebody takes on this weekly pleasure practice, The Sure Thing, you set your own intention. And that's what then inspires you to turn towards your partner. You set a date, you have your weekly time, and then you see what you explore. I call it a love laboratory, because as we explore pleasure, it's an infinite realm, just like orgasm is an infinite realm. If we want to explore and see how good can it feel to just, you know, touch my chest, caress my face, and just the simple, simple pleasures. And if we have a regular practice, you can practice solo, practice with a partner, practice with however many consenting adults, then we open up this channel and awareness in our bodies that I really believe is innate. Our bodies are sensory. It's like a mecca of sensory awareness. We were placed in these bodies, I call them the temple of love, in order to experience pleasure, in order to awaken through and with our senses. And so if we're not doing that, then here's this whole wonderful arena of experience and ecstasy that's available to us, right? And so just having it be playful and bringing curiosity and not the, oh, okay, we're going to have sex now. It's like, no. Now's our sure thing time where we turn towards each other and let's see what's most pleasurable right now. What would be most pleasurable? That often is the question that will start our practice.
I love that. So it can be a partner experience. The sure thing is this space of, in a way, erotic play. Is that, am I catching that correctly? So what do we know what's on the menu? And I'm saying that because sometimes when we haven't connected sexually with our partner for years, we might hear people like assign them kind of like an erotic playtime and they just, oh, I just want like massage because my shoulders are tight, which is okay. But like 6 months of massaging shoulders will not going to lead to, for many people, with erotic connection. So in a way that the activities can be, I think I would imagine needs to be more sensuality focused. Tell me, what are some of the options in the menu that you have explored and you think it works well, especially for vulva owners?
Yeah, I love vulva owners. I love all humans, but you know, vulva owners are particularly juicy. So The Sure Thing is about awakening and exploring the senses. Yes, I love sex. I want it to be sensual. It doesn't have to be. And I hear what you're saying. If you're wanting to connect erotically, sexually with your partner, then yes, then that should be your intention, should be around that. And however, it can certainly begin with a massage, right? Because once I'm having my partner massage my back And then after a while, I might get a flash of him, you know, kissing my neck, right? And then I ask for him to kiss my neck. And then that could lead to him then licking my vulva and on and on and on. And so it's just following the desire. What is it that I want right now? And many of us don't know what we want. And so we can't ask for what we want if we don't know what we want. So one of the things in the book is to really discern and build that muscle of knowing what we want. And then once we know what we want, then we can more easily ask for it. As far as the array of possibilities, it's really limitless, only limited by our imagination. What I encourage people to do is once you schedule your sure thing, whether with yourself, with your partner, you discover what is it that softens you? What is it that gets you more in your body, has you feel more in the mood to open sensually, to open sexually? For me, that's hot water. I love soaking in a bath. And sometimes it's turning on some music with a really funky vibe and groove, and that gets me going. For other people, it may be massaging yourself with oil. It may be looking at a beautiful bouquet of flowers. It may be taking a piece of food of that you delight in that really just opens up your taste buds, and then that really starts turning you on. Finding what is it that helps you to soften and come into your body. So do that. Give yourself 10 minutes, 20 minutes, an hour before your sure thing, so that when you arrive at your sure thing, you're already feeling good in your body. And then you can begin by asking, what would be most pleasurable right now? And just drop in and feel and be like, oh, you know, I'd like you to get some lube on your finger and start stroking my clit. And then you ask, I'd like to just lie. Sometimes we just lie in the bed and hold hands and we start breathing together. And then inevitably, what will begin to happen is that responsive desire is, I feel comfortable. I love this person. I feel safe with him. I want to make out with him now. And so maybe I'll say, honey, I'd really like you to, you know, to start making out with me. Or I'd really like to get naked. But it's everything is possible. It's really based on your appetite and getting ourselves into a place where we're open. And if people have been in a sexless marriage for a while, then you may want to take a step into what feels good for you. It's not about pushing ourselves over our boundary, because that's going to have us close up and contract, right? When we feel pushed into something. No, we want to gently like open like a flower. And so one of the things to respond for people with vulvas is to understand what it is. How do you like to be touched? How do you like your vulva to be touched? What is your favorite kind of lube that you use? I absolutely always use lube. And some people may, oh, well, you know, I have natural. Add to the natural and get something that's edible, that's organic, that's nourishing to you and your partner should they want to go and taste your yoni, to add to it, to bring more pleasure. And so starting with ourselves and really understanding what brings us pleasure and exploring and experimenting and having our own laboratory to explore pleasure.
I love it. I think it's so important, and to be present, right? Like kind of like leaning into what feels good instead of like trying to push yourself in a place of like, it's been a month that we haven't had sex. It's Saturday. We got babysitter. I guess like we have to make it happen. Right, that can feel forced, and it can turn off desire. And oftentimes for people who are new in this journey, as you said, one partner might have higher desire and the other partner might have lower desire. And then we might engage and the desire might not show up, right? Like I love the idea of like the concept of responsive desire. You start exploring, like maybe with sexual stimulation and then see if the desire comes, or erotic kind of connection, sensual connection, see if the desire comes up or not, but it might not. So what is the good way that you make invitation for people to say no on those moments? Because that's also scary, right? That we are in this cycle of many years of saying no. So now that we're having this sure thing, and if we're no, that can be tough to navigate. Yes. How do you recommend people to communicate their no?
Well, I recommend people to communicate from their heart and really say, and if it's a clear no and you're done, like you feel complete, then you just say, honey, this was really lovely and I feel full right now. And, you know, and I look forward, let's make sure we have our next sure thing in our calendar. When is it? You know, and maybe start fantasizing about what's going to happen in your next sure thing. So you're just continuing. This is not the end. This is just a pause. So that's one way. You can also counter offer. You know, so if your spouse is saying, you know, babe, you know, and you're like done, maybe you're having penetrative sex and you feel done. You're done. And your partner hasn't yet had an orgasm. That's okay. We're not responsible for our partner. We're responsible 100% for our own pleasure. And that's one thing that I really love. It's so empowering to be 100% responsible and have our partners be 100% responsible for their own pleasure. So middle, you know, if my yoni is saying she's done and I keep going, then I'm likely to have a urinary tract infection. And that's what happens to me in my body that says I stepped over a boundary. Here's the thing about boundaries. We often don't know it's a boundary until we step over it. So be gentle and kind and loving with ourselves and be like, okay, the next time I get that no, when we're in the middle of having sex, I'm going to say, okay, baby, let's take a break. Let's take a pause. And so, and then you might, your spouse may want to continue and say, well, you know, would you suck my cock? And you don't really want to suck his cock. However, you're like, but I'll get the lube and I'll stroke you. So you could counter offer, or you may not want to stroke him, but you may, hey baby, what about if I get the lube, you stroke yourself and I'll lie here with you and just be with you as you pleasure yourself to orgasm if that's what you want, right? So knowing that we can be clear and honor our boundaries and we can still counter offer something else and play with it and not, you know, have, it doesn't have to stop if we're open to some other avenue.
I agree with you. And as you mentioned, I love the word of laboratory, right? We are on this journey of exploration. So during that sure thing, we are pausing and see what's present. We're not pressuring that we have to have certain kind of outcome, because I had clients throughout the years, and I can imagine you've seen that as well, that they kind of like end up identifying as asexual. Like they discover that, like, I like, and it could be asexuality, could be a spectrum, right? Like, and they discover that, okay, I don't like, and with clients I work with, I don't want to have erotic experiences. It's not satisfying for me. Or some people, they just don't like it, right? Because with asexuality is also a spectrum. People are neutral, could be neutral or could be negative about it. But I think that can be an opportunity for you to explore what comes up in an honest way. Because if you are kind of like, you don't give it enough time and you don't know the timing is right, it's hard to understand what's present. Am I tired? Am I like, this is not a good time for me? Is it because of poor communication? But it can be opportunity for people to explore kind of like what could be the underlying reasons for them. I have a thought. I want to know what you think about it. But that's been very... This is something that I'm curious about. What are the most overlooked reasons marriages become sexless?
I think a big part is that we don't realize that we need to put effort. We expect it to be like it was when we first got together and it was effortless. To, you know, that turn on was always there. The chemistry is there, or the lust is there. And so it's like we're hoping that sometime that might come back, but we're just resigned to, okay, well, this is what it is. And like you said, I didn't want to end up in my parents' marriage, but look what happened. It turned out I did. And I think also because we don't have any practices. We don't have any examples of what works, what will help. You know, what will help? Yes, we're to, okay, have a sex date. Have a date once a week. Have, you know, try different positions. Try sex toys. I know all of this because my spouse and I tried all of this for the decade, more than a decade that we were in this struggle. And I think that, you know, then what comes up is then we, there's a distance and there's an emotional distance that because of the rejection, because of the different desire, because of all that that we spoke of. And then what can be added to that, which is I call the elephant in the bedroom, is shame. And so we feel ashamed. Nobody talks about it. A lot of people are silently suffering. They want to feel closer. They want to feel more sexually fulfilled in their couple. And they're embarrassed. They feel ashamed. And shame is used as a weapon in the society that we live in, right? It's used to make us shrink, to make us be quiet, and to make us just to isolate us. Okay. And so once we bring that into the light and are able to talk about it, then all of a sudden it doesn't have such a hold on us. It doesn't. That's why in the book, I have the whole chapter about shame on who, you know, and games to bring the shame out, name the shame, and recognize that a lot of the voices in our head that are the shameful ones, oh, you should be ashamed of yourself. How dare you? You don't deserve that. Who are you to think you deserve blah, blah? Whose voices are those? Getting curious, like you said, with whose voices are those? Is that a parent voice? Is that a religious leader? Is that a societal voice? Are the voices from outside? Those are generally not the voices of our innate wisdom that are coming forth, you know, that are really shutting us down. So I think that also adds to people growing apart and people ending up in sexless marriages. Because inevitably, given and I call it the patriarchal, puritanical society that we live in, shame exists in it's put upon us about how we view our bodies and how we view pleasure and how we view sex. And so if we don't name it and see that it's separate from ourselves, then that's going to fester in our relationship as we don't have sex and all this other stuff builds up as well.
Lana, you brought up such an excellent point with shame. Many of my clients said that now they don't want sex in the relationship, like vulva owners coming into me. They say, like, at the beginning, I was like showing up as my wild self, because I think when the relationship is novel and when we don't know the person, it can be easier to show up in this free-spirited place. But when you are more in this kind of structured format of whether it's marriage or kind of long-term partnership, then shame can become actually stronger. So it's very interesting that I noticed that many women or vulva owners lose their connection with their desire because of the shame later in the relationship. And you're right, the shame of, I was someone else and now I don't want sex. Like, that can be also create lots of shame for people. And as you mentioned, naming it can be powerful. We got so many comments from the other content we put around sexless relationship. I'm just going to talk about, like, read two of them so we can discuss. Let's start with the first one. This person said, I'm in a sexless marriage and it's been 2 years. She's basically a roommate at this point. I tried to talk to her and she told me she's just not into sex anymore, but she will certainly use her vibrator. I'm so over it. I can't remember last time we even kissed. What's present for me is I hear lots of anger, right? As we're reading, this is understandable, right? No one get married to not have sex. So I can hear that and also the confusion, right? But what do you think about what they said?
I think it's all, unfortunately, all too common. It's not, I've heard that as well before, that, you know, the man is getting rejected, but the sex toy is getting used regularly. So clearly it's not the sex. That's what I would say, that there's something going on there. Obviously, you know, like you said, he's feeling very angry. So I would encourage him to have a space, whether that's a men's circle or in therapy or going out in the woods and, you know, having a fire, eating on a dead tree, you know, something to really express and digest and release the anger. Because I understand 2 years, a long time, however long it is, whatever, to be able to express and release those really challenging emotions and then return to your partner and then say, this is important to me. I want to know you. I want to be close to you. And understand, I would ask him, what is it that sex provides for you? And then I'd keep asking under, and what else? And what else? Besides like the release, the, you know, what do you really want in your partnership? And so when we get to that, besides the orgasm, right? Okay, of course, that feels great. But there's something more. And I believe that there's something really that this man wants. And that's what he can then share with his partner. This is what I want, you know, and what do you want? Because that's the thing. We have, if you're going to be in partnership with someone, in a couple, in a marriage, then communication is essential. And so, and that breaks down, obviously, which is what I was talking about with the panes of glass. You know, every time we don't say something, then that a pane of glass comes down. And so making sure the lines of communication are open, and that's also a practice, and being willing to have the courage to share what is really in your heart, to be vulnerable, because really what I've learned is intimacy only arises in the moment, right? It doesn't exist. All we ever have is this moment, right? And so when I open my heart and I share something and I allow the unknown, I enter into the unknown because I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know exactly how it's going to come out. I don't know how it's going to be received. And I still take that risk and share it. That's intimacy, right? And so then we create this space for then our partner to also show up in that place. Yeah.
I love that you brought up that communication piece and processing the anger. Anger is a valid emotion. All of our emotions are valid. But when we approach the problem from the place of anger, like that's not going to create closeness, right? Like there is something that you would like to address, right? Having more intimacy or sexual connection with the partner. The other invitation I have for people is to take accountability for the outcome you want, right? We're all part of this pattern. Whether if you want to have more sexual intimacy, what's your role for it not happening? Maybe you can kind of book a consultation saying that it's important for me, as you mentioned, let's explore this, or kind of like creating some plan around reconnecting with your partner. Because as if you kind of like at this place of anger and not doing anything, the outcome will not be different. So which is very interesting, kind of lend itself to the next feedback that we got that I want to share with the listener. So another listener said, I was in a sexless marriage for almost 9 years. We dated for 2 years. She changed right after we got married. She actually told me, I acted that way during dating. Otherwise, you would have not married me. I should have had the marriage annulled right then. She wouldn't even let me touch her. We had sex maybe 5 times in the 9 years. I tried to get her to go to counseling, but she always refused. I divorced her in the 9th year. I had 0 feelings for her anymore. I lost everything in the divorce and was homeless for a year. But looking back on the 30 years later, it was the best decision of my life. I'm 61 now and very content and joyful. Well, first of all, like, what a beautiful story, right? Thank you for sharing the ending with us, that like you believed on, like, it's important to have sex, right? Like it was value for you, and you took action based on that. But also, it's like 9 years, it's a long time to be in a challenging place. But I'm glad that it seems like also there was effort to do counseling. Ilana, what do you think about what this person shared with us?
Yeah, I think that I liked the shadow side of the goddess of love, if you will. One of the shadows is manipulation and sexual seduction. Okay, so the feminine aspect, you could say, which is in all of us, male, female, vulva owner or otherwise. So using sexual manipulation and seduction, which it sounds like what happened with this person's former spouse, that's what she did to get him to marry her. And it's unfortunate, it's harmful. And when he got that really clear, truthful response after a couple of years, right, in the marriage. But I don't think he believed it, because it sounds like he stayed another 7 years in the marriage after they weren't having sex for 2 years. So when somebody tells you what they have done, believe them, right? Believe them. We don't have to contort ourselves and keep trying and banging our head against the wall. Really, when someone has said, this is what it is. I was married to a man who I never should have said yes to. That was in this part of my life until I was in my early 30s that I call the conveyor belt of life, or I was semi-disassociated and doing what, being the good girl and doing what everyone of authority wanted me to do. Perfect guy for my parents, right? My vulva had no interest in this guy, but at the time it was like, fine. But after a few years, it was excruciating. And I had to leave the marriage because he was already in my heart. I put us through the ringer. We went to this therapist and this counsel and this and tried this. And he was already in my heart. It was my yoni that he wasn't, you know, who couldn't be bothered with this guy. And so I had to be honest with him finally and tell him that, right? He ended up finding somebody else, happily married. And so when we find the truth in ourselves, or our partner has the courage, or for whatever reason tells us the truth for them, then we have to believe it. And if we, once we know what the truth is, then it takes courage. It takes courage to speak the truth, to recognize the truth, and then to take action based on what is true, because otherwise we'll just continue cycling and cycling.
I agree with you. Kind of like knowing, kind of practicing radical acceptance, which is easier said than done. When we are at the season that we have the truth, or the partner share that with us, that they have no interest of addressing the issue, right? Like, it's different if you say like, I love you, we can make it work. But if the partner says, I don't have desire to change it, or I don't have capacity. In the case you mentioned that, like, I had similar experience that, like, you love someone, but sexual spark, it's can be something, chemistry can be something different. And maybe early on you can make it work, right? Because of that intensity of not knowing someone. But then longer term, it's really shows itself. So I'm glad that this person, like, now in a joyful place. And I hope our listeners, like, after listening to this, think about, what is my next season, like next approach in this season in addressing this? If intimacy is a value for me, regardless of what's happening in my relationship, what would be my next step? And I have an invitation for low desire partner, because I see a lot of them in my practice that they feel shame about it, but they avoid it because they don't want to talk about something that they feel they cannot follow through. So the next step for them also could be, what can I do that is honoring myself, but also moving toward the value of having intimacy? That could be getting your book or having that short thing in their schedule. Could be doing counseling, coaching, retreat. There's a galaxy of option, but not doing anything that can make the situation worse. So Ilana, if our listeners are curious to learn more about you, the resources you offer, what are some of the places they can find that?
Yeah, the best place is to go to my website, which is surethingexperiment.com. And you can get the book, The Sure Thing, A Pleasure Practice to Revive the Spark. And I'm also on Facebook and Instagram and LinkedIn. And you can find the book on Amazon or as well. But surethingexperiment.com. And the book is a roadmap. It's an interactive roadmap to ongoing sensual sexual satisfaction. And there's exercises and prompts and places to draw and respond and journal, and as well as guided visualizations. And so I'd like to gift your listeners one of the guided visualizations that I've recorded called Hello, Wild Sensual Self. So it's that part of us who knows exactly what we want, who's connected with our desire and our passion. And so this journey will help you deepen and reconnect, even if you haven't been in touch with this part of you in quite a long time. I really encourage you to take a listen and see what sparks.
Beautiful. Well, thank you, Lana, for sharing your wisdom with us, sharing the gift with our listeners, and hopefully we'll have you in our future episodes.
Oh, I'd love that. Thank you so much. That was really lovely.
As we wrap up, I want to say this clearly. Life is too short to stay in a relationship where you feel disconnected, unseen, and sexually unfulfilled. A sexless relationship doesn't just affect your physical intimacy. It slowly impacts your emotional connection, your sense of closeness, and even how you see yourself. And if you find yourself in that space, it doesn't mean something is wrong with you, but it does mean it's time to reach out for support. You don't have to figure this out alone. For the first time in a while, we've opened up a limited number of therapy and coaching sessions. And if this is something you're ready to work on, I'd be honored to support you. You can book your appointment using the link in the show notes. Thank you for being here, and I'll see you in the next episode of the Sexology Podcast.
Thanks for listening to the Sexology Podcast. For more great content, visit www.sexologypodcast.com. Please be advised that information presented on this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health provider.